Okay, so Monique, you're gonna intro this week?
Liam.
All right, okay. Welcome to the Anxious Conservatives podcast. I'm one of the Anxious Conservatives, Liam here, contributor to twitter.com, and I have a Patreon. And I'm joined by my fellow co-host and another Anxious Conservative, Monique Poirier. Say hello, Monique. G'day,
Hi.
how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. And Monique is she's the campaigns director for the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance and is an occasional blogger for KiwiBlog, still New Zealand's top read political blog. And how are you feeling today, Monique? You got any anxiety?
Actually, I have had a lump in my throat since Friday, and I can't quite pinpoint why.
Sorry, is
It's
that a, it's not a, it's not a medical lump, it's a lump in your throat of feeling
no, I well,
anxious.
I hope it's not a medical one, because that would be one more reason to be anxious, not knowing what it was. I've just seen you with a glass of wine. That could have actually helped me in this position.
I do this every week, so why do you think I don't mind doing the intros? So you
Yeah.
don't know why you're anxious. It's not because you've committed to buying an apartment that's hasn't been built yet.
Possibly,
Yeah.
possibly. But that's, the house kind of thing's been happening for a while. So, I don't know. And I've just felt I've been in a really weird space, kind of spacey. It hasn't been fun.
Yeah, you're not taking the bait, so you must be really anxious.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm feeling just a general sense of anxiety at the moment because I've got to go out of the office tomorrow. I've got appointments in some of our other branches, and then I've got to drive to Wellington and do a presentation. And I don't mind the pres. I actually don't mind presenting. That's actually fine. But I just hate being out of the office and not knowing what's going on and just worried about what's going to happen while I'm not there. So that anxiety started to set in at about 4 o'clock this afternoon, hence the big glass of Pinot.
Are you gone for the whole day?
No, well, I won't be. I'll barely be in my office. I'll be driving around in the morning, and then I'll probably go down to Wellington at about noon or just afternoon.
Oh, so it's only half the day you'll be gone.
Yeah, but I won't be at, in the morning. I've got external appointments, so. Yeah, it's like I'm going to be out for the whole day, which is, it's fine. I mean, people manage, but just really worry about what's going on.
Well,
Really worry about the emails going to come back to me.
have you at least decided on what you're going to wear? You were wondering whether you go casual or professional.
I was going to wear some khaki sort of chinos and quite a nice sort of tailored paisley shirt. It's, like sort of white and paisley color, plus a nice plain sort of muted navy blazer. I just
No
sort of
turtleneck.
no. That's only I can't do that for real things. It's like everybody wanted me to do that on election night, and I was like, it's one thing to do on a Sunday morning TV, but I can't. Like, this is, it's like more than 1 million people watching. I actually have to look at, in the end, I still looked very scruffy, but I couldn't do it for a gag. And then the number of people who asked me about wearing a turtleneck that night was quite amazing. But I actually think that's a gag of the past. Like, I haven't talked about turtlenecks for a while, or roll necks as
Well,
the
also
word.
you haven't done live TV for a couple of months, have you?
That is true. I have become less popular. I think, ever since we started this podcast, my career has been in the doldrums as a pundit. But I am going to be on Radio New Zealand next week and Newstalk ZB this weekend. So
And
obviously, it's.
you can do that naked.
Yes, I can do whatever, I can wear whatever I want. I can wear a suit and a tie, or I can wear my birthday suit. That's the magic of radio.
Lovely.
At the moment, I'm wearing a Skeletor t-shirt. A Skeletor from He. Did you used to watch He-Man?
No
Oh,
idea what you're talking
you're
about.
too young. Yeah. Because you're not even 30.
Oh, well, I'm less than a year away from 30 now.
Close, getting close. It does actually suck being in your 30s.
Oh, thank
Because
you.
you
Can't wait.
know. Actually, but you've done a lot more than most people have done in by the
I
time of their
think
forties.
that's the problem. I feel old and decrepit and tired,
You've got
and everything hurts. my body just is sore.
It's all in front of you, Monique. You're not in a rut with, you know, children and, you know, a house, you know, in the country that needs a new roof. The world is your oyster. So, but yes, I know anxiety is often not rational. So,
no. Exactly.
Anyway, should we talk about the news instead of our own lame lives?
Yeah. We might just need a cut here. Do you want to go first or me? What do we want to talk? Okay.
You go first. I mean, you ask about the conversion therapy first.
Yeah, yeah. So the Greens did a big petition last week about gay conversion therapy, 150,000 signatures, I think it got, which is, I'm not really sure why they did it considering Labor said they're going to pass it anyway. What are your thoughts on that?
I was really annoyed last week by like the Greens posturing on this issue, like for clout, because I mean the background of it is that look, Labor promised it in the last election that there'd be some sort of ban on so-called conversion therapy, and one of the Labor MPs had a private members bill in the ballot for it. And so National Party, you know, didn't have a policy on it first. You know, it's always sort of a conscience issue, those sort of issues. So they didn't have all their ducks in a row about it. But you know, they came out in favour of supporting it eventually. I mean, the thing is that even Jacinda Ardern, you know, said back when the select committee said that we shouldn't have a gay conversion therapy ban. She said, "Well, look, there are balances, tensions that have got to be resolved, and the, you know, overlapping civil liberties, got to be really careful. Want to have a look at the issue." But anyway, it's all on, you know, in principle, everyone had agreed to it. And then the Greens had this petition, you know, calling for something that every political party in Parliament had agreed to already. And they called for, if you wanted to distinguish it, they were calling for it to be passed with urgency, right? Which means that, you know, the normal parliamentary process would be shortened quite a bit. There would be less opportunity to refine the law. You know, there's all sorts of reasons why that's probably not a good idea. I mean, the fact is that, yes, there are civil liberties and rights that have to be balanced. You've got to be really careful in how you define it. And in fact, even the Labor MP who has the ballot, the bill in the ballot, has acknowledged that her bill will need to be refined quite a bit before it's ready to become law. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, the Greens were pushing for it to be passed with urgency. Then the other day, the government came out and said, right, we're going to have it passed by
February 2022.
Next year. At which point the Green Party, you know, declared victory in it.
Even though that was already,
yeah, I know,
was always the plan.
At least as late as the day that the Greens launched that petition, Labor was saying we're aiming to have this passed by that date. So it's just completely, you know, I mean, I just miss the old days when the Green Party didn't just make stuff up. Like they just seem to always be embellishing and making stuff up now. And, you know, so I guess the suggestion is that, look, the reason that, you know, one benefit for them of running that petition was that it was a culture war issue. They could stir up support from the culture warriors on their side. And as a result of people signing that petition, they got access to all their emails and personal information, you know, things that can be used for voter targeting down the line, which I think, you know, it's kind of dirty pull, but, you know, when you point that out, you know, and you say, look, I kind of miss the old Greens. You know, they were a bit rough around the edges. They weren't as slick, but, you know, they had principled. Yeah, they had pretty good. And anyway, what's really telling about when you say that, what's really telling is you have people come and say, oh, you just like those Greens because they were losers. You know, like that. So, like, you know, we talk about Trumpism, but Trumpism really is actually just a symptom of, you know, the political times. Because when you have people on the left saying, sort of denigrating the old Greens because they were losers by sort of sticking to their ethics quite a bit and, you know, and holding themselves to quite a high bar, you know that Trumpism actually just reflects the deeper sickness in our politics. It's all about the perception of being on the winning side and owning the others. And, you know, it is sad to think, well, look, you know, the Greens are just a political party like any other, but they're certainly no more special than the others.
It's almost the case now that the Māori Party is the principled party in politics now, in that they are definitely there to stand up for their own principles and values and whatnot, and stuff it to the speaker, stuff it to everyone else if it doesn't fit that bill. Whereas the Greens definitely just, yeah, they're part of the furniture now, and so they just go along with the flow, I reckon.
Yeah,
do what they know will work with their base.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely saw that in the last term, the first term of Ardern, right? Because I mean, the Greens had a confidence and supply agreement that, you know, they said that meant they had to swallow a whole lot of dead rats, including, you know, voting for the waka jumping bill, you know, to prevent waka jumping. But, you know, I remember as an older person in my, you know, mid-30s already, I remember in 1999 to 2002, the Greens had a confidence and supply bill. They almost threatened to bring down the government over genetic engineering. And, you know, it's impossible to imagine the great, like, sort of more career-minded Greens of today ever drawing a line in the sand in that way.
I still think the Greens would have, I mean, I know in theory they're not part of the government, but they have signed that. What have they signed?
Do they have a memorandum of understanding or something like that? Yeah.
You know, they would have been far better. I know they are doing opposition to an extent, but they would have been far better just being purely, you know, away from the government so they could stand on their own kind of two feet. And yeah, they're still, to many of their members, just complicit now in a government that's kind of doing bugger all.
Yeah, but do their members care? Because I think
they definitely are. I mean, at least I know of quite a few young ones who are just going to join Labour now because they're like, well, it's just as bad as the Greens, but at least Labour sort of has a little bit of principle that they're sticking to.
Yeah, because it just always struck me that what we've seen over the years is that the Greens are mostly an anti-national party more than for anything. Mm. And so, you know, as long as the Greens are against national, you know, like it's... But, you know, maybe you're right. I mean, what's if you're not going to differentiate yourself in any meaningful way? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. The pragmatic thing to do, the smart thing to do is join the party that it can at least win.
Yeah, true. Well, look, you know, I'm always in favor of bigger parties. You know, to me, a two-party system is ideal. Then you have internal coalitions within that two-party system. But, and we're heading there over time. Anyway, look.
I hope so.
I think... I really thought that bashing the Greens would lift my spirits a little bit. It hasn't. Should we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, Kim and Kanye. The very important pop culture.
That's really, that makes me really sad. You know.
Actually, I've never really given a toss about celebrities, but I genuinely thought, you know, they'd be a pair that lasted.
I know. I mean, to me, I have been a bit of a Kim K fan, you know, over the years, but
definitely evolved.
Yeah, but in particular, I remember during there was one feud that when Kanye Smith was having with Kanye was having with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, yeah.
And Taylor Swift was doing her normal thing, like, you know, she was like complaining in public, and then Kanye West called her up. And, you know, was talking to her about it. And, you know, she was like, oh, it doesn't matter.
And then came out.
Yeah. And then so she went back to being a victim in public. But Kim K actually taped the conversation. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, this is husband and wife working together. You know, like this is how, you know, they should be, you know.
They had each other's back.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's to me the essence of marriage. But, you know, I guess... I don't know what's happened to Kanye West. I mean, he's a musical genius.
Well, I mean, he is, but it's clear that there are some mental health issues there, and you can just often those geniuses don't get help because it's the thing that makes them geniuses.
Yeah. Well, we can actually circle back to that a little bit, to one of the questions that I've seen come through about smart people. But I think you're right. You know, if you're so far ahead of everybody else, you're that much less likely to want help. You know, you think you can figure it out.
Yeah. Should we'll go to that question. It's from Robbie. How or why do you act on your beliefs when you know that people who are smarter than you disagree?
Yeah, I do think it's a really good question from Robbie, and I think about it a lot too, because, you know, I think we all like to consider ourselves to be above average in intelligence, but we know that we can't all be above average. But I think we make too much of a of individual intelligence in people, especially in the world of government, because very few people, every person, no matter how smart, they're still bound by the rules of human nature, and nobody, no matter how smart, comes to their opinion purely on the basis of reason. And so intelligent people will often have a sort of position that's just as prejudiced as anybody else's. It just seems that they're better at defending it, right? Mm. Because their intelligence gives them the power to better justify or rationalize a decision that wasn't arrived at a matter of pure reason anyway. In fact, because they're intelligent, it can actually give you it takes away some of that humility that is the difference between being smart and being wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's someone who's aware of their limitations is that much likely to hold back just a little bit. And yeah, it's that being a bit circumspect that can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah. I mean, I'm naturally a very cautious person, very cautious. I don't take really any risk at all. And with that, I mean, alongside that, it's probably because I'm quite self-conscious. And so even though I know I'm probably academically quite smart, I'm always questioning myself. And so I'm always wanting to learn, and I'll never, ever, ever be stuck in my ways on a position that I have. If someone could convince me otherwise, you know, yeah, I'll take it on board. And so I guess for me, I just assume, I mean, I know I'm not the smartest person out there, so I'm happy to take the lead, take lead and guidance from people if something I'm doing is wrong.
But you shouldn't just blindly follow them just because they're smart either, right?
No, I mean, I'm, for anyone that knows me, I'm also probably one of the most headstrong people out there. So, I'm like a mix of being cautious, but also if I know that something is right, I will do it.
So like if you look at the whole world out there, all the information that's out there in the world, it's a huge and complex place, right? Mm. So the smartest person in the world, the most educated, most intelligent person in the world, do you think they even have 1% of the knowledge about all of human affairs, let alone all the world's affairs?
Not even 0.1.
Right? Yeah. So let's say you're an award-winning economist in one particular one slither of a particular field that you've devoted your whole life study to, and you're the absolute expert in that field. That doesn't guarantee anything in terms of wisdom on any of the other subjects about human affairs or human nature at all. In fact, what it might give you is an overinflated sense of ego about how much you do know, a sense of overconfidence about your ability to plan things. And that's why, you know, if you look, you know, I mean, the perfect example is, you know, is the history of communism in the 20th century. I mean, you know, they had, you know, after the revolution, you had all these really smart people. They were going to coordinate the economy. They were going to scientifically plan it. You know, they were going to apply the latest scientific theories to the growing of agriculture. But it was a massive failure. And the reason it was a failure was because, as smart as those individuals were, as smart as the central planners were, they did not, the knowledge that you need to coordinate and to make things prosperous and to feed people even is so widely dispersed that no person can have a monopoly on it. So basically, I think that one of the keys to wisdom is humility and intelligence doesn't always get in the way of wisdom and humility and wisdom, but doesn't guarantee it either.
Yeah. I have a few, not philosophies to life, I suppose they are. Humility is one of them. The other one is authenticity, which I think goes hand in hand with humility, because if you're authentic, you don't care about being humble, and being that humility doesn't matter to you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's always important to be honest. And I guess authenticity is first and foremost honesty, isn't it? And it's a virtue.
Yeah, it is.
Right, okay. Well, speaking of the most intelligent people in New Zealand, have we solved child poverty yet? I understand there's some information that came out. Has the government done it?
if you still count over 150,000 children living in poverty, then is solving it? I guess we have. The figures show that there was a very slight decline, but unfortunately it didn't cover off the lockdown period, where we know that undoubtedly where people were losing their jobs, or at least were on a reduced income, that children would have been suffering. But they didn't want to do any interviews or whatnot over that period, so it's just not counted. And so we can essentially, we've been told to expect worse figures in the next quarter. Yeah. And unfortunately as well, it's Pacifica and Māori children who are worse off still.
It always is. So I think we had household incomes decline by something like 7% over the past year. So it's hard to believe that child poverty would have declined in any way. I mean, based on how we measure
and of course, when you look at the measures, you know, it's the measures. When you think about child poverty, you think about, can kids go to school with food in their stomach, with shoes on their feet? You're not thinking about these other measures that the government is talking about. And so I think we've just got to be really careful when we do hear the government say that we're improving on, you know, their supposed eight measurements out of nine, because the one that really matters, which is material deprivation, is just shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, you made a bit of a splash on child poverty recently. You had a post on a Kiwi blog that set out your, I guess some people would call it heresy, as a conservative on the matter, you know, but this one I happen to agree with it. You're a National Party voter and you're a self-identified conservative, so I can only assume, Monique, tell me if I'm wrong, that your view on child poverty is that children should pull themselves up by their bootstraps and there should be absolutely no government intervention or assistance.
Yep, and it's all their fault. All their fault.
They should have chosen to have better parents and they should live with the consequences. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yep, 100%.
Why don't you tell us the real answer?
I mean, it really, I know I say it a lot on Twitter, and people probably think I'm just I don't even know if this term is used anymore, virtue signaling. I say that with rabbit ear hands, but it really just makes me so angry that in the week that I wrote that, we just dished out $55 million for the media. You know, we've got the America's Cup that the government and council have funded. It just makes me so angry that our priorities don't seem to be in the right place.
From a centre-right perspective, I guess, you know, you're a fiscal conservative, and so you've got an emphasis on equality of opportunity, not outcome. So what would you say to people? I mean, what would you say to people who say, right, well, you know, advocating for more intervention is at cross purposes with that?
So all goes back to the fact that this is not the child's fault. And if we want to stop intervention from happening, if we want to stop government intervention, if we want everyone to have personal responsibility, we actually have to ensure that children grow up in a way that they can do that.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be able to do that if they're starving and they're not going to school and they're not learning. We cannot break the cycle of poverty if we just let families deal with it themselves, because it's not happening. So if we have that expectation, which so many people do, it's a failure. It's failed. It doesn't work.
From a centre-right perspective, the way I would sort of bounce off that or develop that is to think, right, well, what's going to cost us more in the long term?
And more than that too. Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is this is sort of that Bill English idea, I suppose, in a way, that you invest early on and you don't have problems, you know, later on. Yeah.
And that's what I mean about breaking that cycle of poverty. Yeah. I believe in personal responsibility, and I wish we lived in a country that actually didn't rely on welfare, you know, like that's my ultimate goal. I don't want there to be welfare because I want everyone to be in a position where they don't need it. Of course, there always needs to be a safety net. And I think most conservatives would agree with that. But it's the reliance on it that we cannot expect it to go away if we don't address it.
Yeah, I think what you're setting out is a truly philosophically conservative position, because Because I mean, one of the key things about conservatism is that, you know, it's about living in the real world, right? It's, you know, we're not libertarians in the sense that we're not enslaved to these abstract dogmas. You know, it's you know, we have principles, we have you know, places we'd like to get to, but we recognize we've got to live in the world that we've got, and the world that we've got's pretty imperfect. You know, it's, you can't be made perfect.
And we shouldn't be. You know, maybe this is my really soft side coming through, but you know, I just don't think we should be punishing children for our own beliefs. Our beliefs should not be, should not impact kids in a country as amazing as New Zealand.
I mean, there was an old, there was a bloke who lived on our farm as an old guy, and he was a bricklayer by, you know, when he worked. And he was National Party through and through. And the reason was because back after, his father was died in the Second World War, and he was a war orphan. And the National Party really took care of war orphans. That first national government really took care of them. And that's part of our tradition to look out, you know, to recognise that, yes, the state has to be kept, you know, has to be kept carefully under control, and it can't get too big. But it does exist for a reason, and it does have this role in coordinating help for those who can't help themselves.
And I mean, going back to my fiscal conservatism, I am also just a true believer in core services. So, you know, none of this funding arts and all of that kind of nonsense. But where I do differ is on kids being able to eat.
Well, I was gonna apply for some of that $55 million for this podcast, but you make me feel guilty now. I'm sure that New Zealand on Air will be extremely politically neutral in how it doles out that $55 million. I'm sure half of it will go to conservative reporters, and half of it will go to libs.
Well, I mean, are there any conservative reporters out there anymore?
I can think of one or two, but I don't want to get in trouble by naming them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're probably undercover.
We all know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, so it is really, I really do take some interest in your point too about funding core services. And so is it your position that, you know, really, you know, there are some things that there's consensus about what government should be doing. And when the government strays from that, it's diverting resources away from things that everybody agree are universal good. So I haven't fully thought about it, but what you're saying is, every time they make a grant for some sort of hideous piece of modern art or something like that, that's a hip operation that could have been done, or that's a child that could have got school books.
I'm going through the Auckland Council long-term plan consultation document, and everywhere I keep reading, we need to make cuts, we've got to do this, it's going to be hard. And then I see big grants for, you know, installations and parks and park upgrades, and those are really nice, and we need to not have crappy parks, but we're in a infrastructure crisis. It's taking people to get to work 3 hours. We've got water systems that haven't been upgraded for years because they've been trying to keep water prices low. It's just not there's just not enough focus on priority spending.
Well, it could be worse. You could live in Wellington.
Yeah, well, at least there's not shit on the roads in Auckland.
There we go. That's our explicit rating earned for another week. Right. Were there any other questions that you sort of, I mean, most of the questions we get on Twitter are pretty garbage. Were there any other ones that you thought were interesting?
I'd quite like to know about your manscaping.
I don't do it. So Sam Grover, who's a, like a, I suppose if for people who listen to who follow don't use Twitter, Sam Grover is a somewhat minor Twitter figure from you know, what we call NZ Poll, the New Zealand political Twitter, and he wanted to know about us to talk about manscaping, which I think is, you know, about men's personal care, doesn't interest me. You know, people go and look at Sam, go and look that up on the internet if that's an area of interest.
I like this one from Danny. What's the one thing you wish people understood about Christianity? That's a kind of a serious one, but
yeah. Okay. Well, what do you think? What do you wish? While I gather my thoughts.
Yeah, I was hoping to have some time to gather my thoughts too. For me, it's not a choice.
So belief, you mean?
It's not a choice. I'm not choosing to believe in God. For me, the one thing I wish people knew is, you know, I'm not actively, it's just in me. It's part of me. I can't change it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, for me, I wish that everybody would know that, you know, there's only one true church, which is the Catholic Church, and that Protestantism is a heresy, and that the Orthodox aren't heretics, but they should come back into the fold. But most, not everybody would accept that. So I guess what I would say is I wish that people would understand how historically grounded Christianity is, right? Mm. That we're talking about, the events are old from our perspective, more than 2,000 years old. But in terms of historical documentation, they're kind of recent. We have a lot of written sort of material from that year, so that they're not myths or legends. It's certainly not the you know, the Gospels and the New Testament anyway. As a result of that, Christianity is kind of unique in some ways, and it's something that can be disproved very easily by the historical record. It's not something where there's any expectation that you'd have blind faith. What I would, if anyone's interested in Christianity more, I would say generally go and get a book about the history of Christianity that starts from the earliest, you know, that sort of 2,000 years ago, and read it, and you'll be absolutely fascinated by that, by the history of the church. That's kind of a cop out, actually. I mean, but what I'm trying to point out, I suppose, is that it's something that's it's serious. It's a serious historical phenomenon. It's got a lot of history and philosophical grunt behind it. And, you know, I think a lot of the times the representations of Christianity in the media are always the worst. It's like the dumbest versions, the versions that are least steeped in that history and that sort of way of living and thinking. Anyway, I'm just rambling now at this point because I'm trying to cover up for my lack of a good answer. So that was too good of a question, really. Thanks, Danny.
We'll do a couple more. The notorious Chris Pink wants to know why the Daily Blog is now the most sensible voice on the left, unironically.
I'll talk about a smack, I guess, about Martin because he's quite mean about me. But the Daily Blog is a left-wing blog that's quite anti-woke in terms of its stance. And it really hates the spin-off. Full disclosure, I've been paid by the spin-off from time to time to write for them. But to me, I think one of the reasons is that the new younger generation of libs, you know, I think Martin's Bradbury, who runs the Daily Blog, is lame. And so his venomous hatred of that sort of politics or those people is about being left out and not being one of the cool kids, you know, anymore. And that, you know, in a different era, he would be leading the charge. The Daily Blog, I should say, would be leading the charge, you know, of wokeness against us. So, you know, it's a to the extent that people think there might be an alliance there, it's probably an alliance of, you know, convenience, you know, co-belligerence, but, you know, we can never really be on the same page.
Yep.
Do you read the Daily Blog?
No.
No. It's pretty rubbish.
No. Pretty much only.
It makes me think less of Chris that he would say that. I'll see him one tomorrow. I'll hit him up about it.
Last one. What's the latest goss from your home, from your little village? I was going to call it a hometown, but it really is just a village, isn't it?
It is a village. What's happening in Rongotea? I've got to be really honest with you. We've withdrawn a little bit from Rongotea society because we used to be in the play centre, you know, movement, so to speak. You know, do you know what play centre is?
No.
So people don't, but Play Centre.
Is it a Play Centre?
Well, Play Centre is this great traditional New Zealand movement. It's like this indigenous thing to New Zealand, whereby it's not like kindy, it's like play school, but the association has a house and or a centre, and you take your kids there, and the parents run it, right? So it's it's, you know, there's not, it's all done by volunteers, and it's great. Mm-hmm. And it's, so it's still quite strong in rural New Zealand, and we were in it. You know, and as a result of that, I actually had access to all of the gossip, because, you know, my wife would just, you know, talk to, they would all talk while I was looking after the kids, and I would hear everything. But we've left that because, for various reasons, coming down to, you know, time commitments and everything like that. My wife was the co-president, which I think just sucked up a lot of time. And so now my youngest boy is going to go to kindy. He'll be at school soon anyway. And as a result, we've really been cut off from village life.
To have another kid.
Yeah, when Bay was going to leave, I was like, can't you just stay? Because, you know, like, I want to know what's going on. Like, you know, screw you, you know, don't worry about your busyness or your mental health or anything like that, or your being frazzled. Can just, you know, I need to know what's happening with the neighbours. But yeah, so we actually don't have a lot of good gossip at the moment. The Catholic Church there, which I belong to, we're going to get some new hymn books. I don't like them, but, you know, other people do. But it's up to, I've got to, you know, what I'm going to exercise as much influence behind the scenes by controlling the hymn book procurement process to just leave out the ones I really hate.
And you make sure, like, the font is the same all the way through, because it really annoys me when you can tell they've literally copied, like, as in cut out, sellotaped it, and photocopied different hymns in the book. That's really annoying.
I mean, the ones we've got at the moment is a little red book, and it is a book, but you're right. Okay. As they've added these newer, crappier hymns, they have just, like, photocopied them in and say, and into the back of the book. It looks really gross, but, yeah, needless to say, like, Shine Jesus Shine's gonna come out of it. That'll be gone. Oh, whoops, I must have just forgot to add that one in. Catholic music is so dire and bad. The hymns are just awful. There's only so much I can do, really.
Yeah.
What about in your village, Auckland?
Well, everything's falling apart. It took me 45 minutes to get home, and normally it's a 7-minute trip. Life's great. That's just what happens in Auckland. That's just
So it sounds traffic. Like it's getting worse, is it? Or
okay. The chainsaw man was back last night. For Twitter followers who follow me, they'll know that randomly in, like, the middle of the night, my neighbor whips out his chainsaw and at the same time will start digging. I don't know how many dead bodies are in the backyard.
That's really ominous.
And
you know, when we were looking for our first house, you know, we had an offer on one, and I had a building inspection on it, and the builder came up to me, sort of started up to me, was like, just so you know, there's, like, a shallow grave under the house, and there's a shovel in it, and it's about the size of a grave.
The shovel was in it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
and the reason he was bringing it up is that they had stacked the spoil up, and it was touching the like a joist or something like that, so it was rotting it. I was like, I don't know how I felt. Like, you know, I didn't tell Bay about it. Like, I didn't want to alarm her. In fact, the deal fell over for other reasons. But it was just creepy to think, why would someone do that?
Was it human length?
Yeah, it was like the size of a human grave, but shallow, quite shallow.
No.
Yeah, no.
It's
weird to think about the fact that, you know, like, so somewhere out there in New Zealand at the moment, someone's planning a murder, right? Or thinking about murdering someone else.
Happy Tuesday, everyone.
But isn't that creepy? Like, you look out the window in Auckland and you see all these houses, and somewhere out there, someone statistically is thinking about murdering someone else.
Not something I can say I think about often. But
just next time you're looking at the cityscape, just think about it. You know, there are people up to all sorts. Yeah, you're looking out the window. It could be your next door neighbor.
I'm now, maybe someone can explain this to me. The Sky Tower is green and red at the moment, which to me is Christmas colors. And I'm very confused. If someone can tell me why, normally there's a reason, and I don't know what this one is.
Send in your reasons for next week's Anxious Conservative podcast. Yeah. But
speaking of next week, we're actually in the same location next Wednesday night. So maybe you should we should try and somehow figure out how to do this in person.
Yeah, we could actually. So I've got to go to Radio New Zealand at 4 o'clock. And then that thing that we're going to, that secret conspiracy thing, yep. That's at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we could do it afterwards. Is it at the usual place?
No, it's at the my.
Okay. Well, we can find some space to do it. Maybe we can grab a guest as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That sounds awesome. Okay. Well, that's great. I get to see you next week.
Yay.
But for now, that's it. This is has been the Anxious Conservatives podcast. I'm Liam here, and that was Monique Poirier. And we both wish you a very good rest of the week.
Yep. Thinking about murderers outside.
And just be aware that at the moment somebody's thinking about murdering somebody else. Good night.